compliments to the expert garland maker, whoever it is. Huh? Very good. Very good. Where'd you learn? Just here and there. Okay. We're continuing with Canto 3, Chapter 13. We're going to be discussing verses 5 through 8. And because these introductory verses, 1 through 4, are substantial, significant, I just thought to touch on the two main messages. There's a question asked by Vidura to Maitreya, because this whole, the major part of the third canto and then into the fourth canto is that exchange. Shukadeva Goswami narrating the discussion between the two. And one of the big questions, took a lot of time to describe, was the process of creation. That's something Vidura wanted to hear from Maitreya. It's not that Vidura's a learned person. He knew, but he wanted to hear from the authoritative source, Maitreya. And so Maitreya explained Sarga and Visarga, what Vishnu did, what Brahma did, and towards the end of what Brahma did was he made arrangements for filling up the universe that he created. And that arrangement specifically was Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, Manu number one, and Shatrupa, born directly from the body of Brahma in an adult form. Pretty amazing. And then it mentioned his three daughters and who they married, and they were Prajapatis who helped fill up the universe with good praja. And so that's how chapter 12 ends. Chapter 13 begins with Shukadeva Goswami saying, having heard this, Vidura asks, please describe the activities of Swayambhuva Manu. And then the explanation is given, because this is important, there's two main points. The activities of such elevated souls is equally as valuable as the activity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, because of their pure devotion, they're intimately connected with the Supreme Lord, therefore as valuable. And it should be heard, in fact, that's what text 4 says. Translation of text 4. Well, text 3. O best of the virtuous, this is Vidura speaking to Maitreya, the original king of kings, Manu, was a great devotee of the personality of Godhead, Hari. And thus, it is worth hearing of his sublime character and activities. Please describe them. I'm very eager to hear. So, eagerness, inquisitive. For someone that's on the path of transcendence, they're not just interested in gossip. They're interested in activities of pure devotees. And there's this nice word, you know, there's a quality to his hearing, it's the eagerness. Shraddhanaya. Shraddhanaya, same as Shraddha. Eager to hear. Inquiring into transcendence includes inquiring into the activities of pure devotees because of their connection, perfect, pure connection with transcendence. And then The next point, text 4, this is just review. Persons who hear from a spiritual master with great labor and for a long time must hear from the mouths of pure devotees about the character and activities of pure devotees. So that point is the same, but it's more now a qualitative explanation of that hearing and inquisitiveness of that which is worthy to hear. And that is, for a very long time, suchira shramasya, we read this right in the purport previously, so it's repeating. For a very long time. Shramasya. Shramasya is laboring very hard. So, like a reminder of our just completed Harinam, the Holy Name workshop, effort. Effort sustained over time. So that this is the Bhagavatam's saying the same thing as we heard over the weekend about Abhyasa, Jiva Goswami quoting, it's every day for a prolonged period of time with great faith. So faith is in the previous explanation. So when there's faith, there's effort. So great effort over a long period of time. So that's Abhyasa. So for those who are not yet on the stage of Vidura, we do the same thing. And when you're on the stage of Vidura, you do the same thing. It's mature. Not yet mature, becoming mature, mature. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, he points to this word artha, artha, as a goal. So it's a worthy goal. That's his point. The worthy goal is the process and the fruit of the process, the mature stage of the process. And one should hear from and one should hear about, as far as possible, from pure devotees, about pure devotees. That's what the translation says. The source that we hear from, like Prabhupada's statement, I may be impure, but if I speak the words of a person who's pure, my speaking is pure. I may be imperfect, but if I speak the words of a perfect person, my speaking is perfect. That's how he said it. So, hearing in disciplic succession. We hear Bhagavatam classes from persons that may not be perfect. If they speak the words that they heard from a perfect person, that's speaking is perfect. Consciousness may not be perfect, but the speaking is perfect and that it has great effect, it has great potency. So this is a process that's approved. Artaha, Prabhupada has in the word for word, statements. This is a statement of learned persons that say this is good. And Vishwanath is having faith in this goal, that both the activity and the mature stage of the activity, this is worthy. And so then there's this qualitative explanation of how it's done. With great effort for a long period of time. Don't be impatient. It's easy to be impatient. It's more goodness quality to be patient. The patience comes from not only the mode of goodness, but conviction is going to take me to where I want to go. At least it'll purify my existence minimally. That's mode of goodness. And higher is transcendence. So that carries over into this next set of verses. Starting with text 5. So again, the narrator is Shukadev Goswami, who said, this is not Maitreya or Vidura speaking, it's Shukadev speaking about Maitreya and Vidura, who says, the personality Godhead, Sri Krishna, was pleased to place his lotus feet on the lap of Vidura because Vidura was very meek and gentle. The sage Maitreya was very pleased with Vidura's words, and being influenced by his spirit, he attempted to speak. So some glorification is going to Vidura. Krishna was pleased, Maitreya was pleased. It says a lot about Vidura. And the incident was when Krishna went to Hastinapur to make a peace arrangement. He went to Vidura's home. Vidura was happy to be in service to Krishna in his home. He served as Krishna's pillow for his feet. Krishna was very pleased with Vidura, and so he allowed that service. To get service, what to speak of that service? The quality of devotion opens the door for service. I mean, it works both ways. Service awakens devotion, and devotion provides opportunities for service. We discussed this a little bit yesterday also. So, Shukadeva is appreciating Vidura being very fortunate to get Krishna's mercy like that, and the qualification is not specifically mentioned his devotion, but specifically is mentioned that he was gentle and meek. You know, you say the opposite of proud. I'm special. Krishna came to my home. I'm special. Krishna allowed me to place his feet on my lap. I'm special. So, no pride. Amanina manadena. No sense of trinadapi. Very humble. Meek, gentle. Similar characteristic is described by Narada from his previous life. That was a quality that the Bhaktivedantas appreciated in him. Besides, he wasn't frivolous. Very meek and gentle. Nice little boy. Very meek and gentle. So, naturally their affection was poured towards him. Krishna's affection is naturally poured towards Vidura. I mean, his devotion, of course, but specifically mentioned along with his devotion is this meek and gentle. The Sanskrit word is vinitam. Vinitam. I know somebody whose name is Vinita. So, vinitam, meek and gentle. Shukadeva appreciating Vidura. And then appreciating Maitreya's appreciation for Vidura. Eagerness to hear this previous qualification described. He, Maitreya, being vastly learned and vastly qualified, he himself was eager to hear from Krishna speaking to Uddhava, and so he's full. And he's appreciating the characteristic and qualities of Vidura, his eagerness to hear, and his understanding of what's worthy to hear. And otherwise not interested in other katha, other conversation. So, personality guided, was pleased. Whoops. Maitreya was inspired by the thought of Vidura's wonderful fortune. The hairs of his body stood on end. Maitreya, just thinking about his good fortune. And being influenced by his spirit, that his seems to refer to Vidura's spirit, his good fortune and his meek and gentle spirit, he attempted to speak. So the Sanskrit, it's not in the translation, but his Maitreya's hairs were standing on end. Certainly just to speak about Krishna, or speak about Krishna's pure devotee, and in this case that pure devotee is Manu. Of course, Manu is one of our principal Mahajans, principal great authorities of all time. So he's not just a nice devotee, he's a very, very, very special authority. And now let's hear how this special authority addresses someone who he considers as his authority, another of the 12 Mahajans, Brahma, because it's his father. And although Mahajan 1, Mahajan 2, he is respecting Brahma. Let's hear. The sage Maitreya said to Vidura, so now he begins his response after his hair is standing on and feeling ecstatic, just appreciating Vidura's good fortune and qualities. After his appearance, Manu, the father of mankind, along with his wife, thus addressed the reservoir of wisdom, Brahma, with obeisances, unfolded hands. Text 7. You are the father of all living entities and the source of their subsistence because they are born of you. Please order us how we may be able to render service unto you. Short purport. A son's duty is not only to make the father the source of supply for all his needs, but also, when he has grown up, to render service unto him. That is the law of creation, beginning from the time of Brahma. A father's duty is to bring up the son until he is grown, and when the son is grown up, it is his duty, the son's duty, to render service unto the father. Now, fathers have to be qualified, along with sons being qualified. Small thing. Or husbands have to be qualified along with wives being qualified. It's not the unqualified husband, as happens, makes demands on poor wife, you're my obedient servant, without being qualified to be obeyed. So it's emphasis is going on the son's duty. I'm just making a comment, it's both. Then, similar to the father-son relationship is teacher-student, certainly in the Vedic paradigm of teacher-student, or head of state and dependent, or spiritual master-disciple, these four categories of some superior and subordinate. The duty of that superior is to deliver the student, or son, or citizen, or disciple, from birth and death. That's a big qualification. But that's the qualification. So Brahma has that qualification. And so in the beginning, it's the duty of the father to do that. So specifically it says, supply, subsistence. Supply, subsistence. So there's the physical, there's the emotional, and there's the spiritual. And spiritual is the one upon which the other two rest. In other words, the father, it's incomplete if just subsistence is one, but not all three, or two, but not all three. Subsistence means all those things. You'll see in the final verse where this is going. There's a spiritual conception. Manu is a Mahajan, so he has a spiritual conception. The spiritual conception is, we can say, the holistic picture, but subsistence is not just the physical. He has a complete picture of subsistence. And then the son, or the one, when one becomes mature, the student or the disciple or the citizen, then wants to give back in the maturing stage, extend service. Something like tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya. So seva can start early, it doesn't have to wait. And a son or the superior subordinate relationship doesn't have to wait. Like, I'll give charity when I'm wealthy. But the principle of charity is a principle. And a person of character understands the principle. And so, good parenting helps the child, or good teachers help the student, etc., to understand to be charitable. So understand service is appropriate. And certainly in the mature stage. But at every stage, according to one's position. Then the final verse, text 8. Oh, worshipful one, this is Swami Bhumano speaking to Brahma. Please give us your direction for the execution of duty within our working capacity so that we can follow it for fame in this life and progress in the next, which sounds like karmakanda notion. So Vishwanath is really clear that, you know, that the progress in the next means going back to Godhead. It's in Prabhupada's purport also. And the fame is not, hey, I want to get famous. It's this ultimate fame. The ultimate fame. What's that? Being intimately connected with the Supreme Lord. That's a famous person. Wow. So that's the yashaha, or fame, that he's looking for. It's being connected with the all-famous. And being connected after this life, in this life and after this life. That's the unpacking of those terms. It's not Swami Bhumano is into karmakanda, or he wants some instruction from Brahma in karmakanda activity so he can become famous and go to heaven and progress further after heaven. It's not Swami Bhumano. Purport. Brahma is the direct recipient of Vedic knowledge from the personality of Godhead, and anyone discharging his entrusted duties in disciplic succession from Brahma is sure to gain fame in this life and salvation in the next. And then Prabhupada gives the entire disciplic succession from Brahma, which I'm not going to read. Final paragraph. This line of disciplic succession from Brahma is spiritual, whereas the genealogical succession from Manu is material. But both are on the progressive march toward the same goal of Krishna consciousness. So something material can be spiritualized. He's not speaking about genealogy in the verse, it's just Prabhupada is bringing it up. But Brahma to Manu has that spiritual, and Brahma to Manu, because he's his son, is genealogical. Either way you look at it, the goal is Krishna consciousness, if the source is Krishna consciousness. That's the message. So besides the material aspect of father-son, there's the spiritual aspect of Brahma and Manu. Manu's qualified, Brahma's qualified eminently, and so that's spiritual or spiritualized, either way. Then one last thing is service is visionless as according to my capacity. No, it's right here. Duty within our working capacity. So what's your psychophysical capacity or nature? And those are duties. And he's asking specifically, what's my duty? To assist you in your duty, because his duty, Brahma's duty, is to create the universe and fill it up with good praja. So he's going to be asked to do that. And he does that. As already mentioned from the previous chapter, like just touched on. So now it's expanding his qualities and his activities with further detail. It is part of Visarga, something that Brahma does, and Brahma does through others in this case. Not directly doing, but through his instruction he's doing. And the devotees who are carrying out the instruction, they're doing on his behalf. Something like our process of deity worship, very similar. In the process of deity worship, there's procedure, but it's also consciousness is driving the procedure, and that is before approaching the deity. Manuals for deity worship says you approach the spiritual master and request the opportunity to assist the spiritual master. In Alachua, they make announcements every morning after Guru Puja, before class, and one of the things they announce is who, on behalf of their spiritual master, worshipped all the deities that are on the altar. They have a lot of deities on the altar. So they have lots of volunteers that want to do a deity service. So they name the names. They don't say the name of the spiritual master who they're approaching, but every morning it's a reminder. On behalf of their spiritual master, they serve the following deities. This one served this deity, that one served that deity. Because it's part of, you know, it's consciousness. It's protocol, but it's consciousness. So similarly, Krishna consciousness, to spiritualize our worldly duties, we need to understand we're doing duties on behalf of. And, you know, on behalf of Krishna, because he creates the system, Varnashram system. He says right in Bhagavad Gita, he has created it. Chaturvarna maya srishtam guna karma vibhagasha. Same as what Brahma, what Manu is saying, according to our capacity, according to our nature, what is suitable for us. So it may not be explicitly enunciated, you know, this is your duty, boom. But it comes from scripture, and then scripture comes through disciplic succession, and that can tell us what our duty is in some circumstance. Cleanliness, and, you know, etc. Was there somebody, well, the other day, who was describing the details of deity worship that they have begun? There were 8 sessions by a qualified person to teach how to do deity worship. So before taking up anything, it's really good to know how to do that something. Now sometimes we're asked to do something we really don't have, you know, 8 classes of how to do that something. But it's good, training and education according to codes of the Vedas, that's good. So we have many people that we're indebted to who helped train us. And, training is a lifetime. and we're indebted to those who assist. And those who assist are ones who received, and so it's actually ultimately Krishna. The Adi Guru. That's the consciousness of a qualified devotee, or one who's becoming qualified. I don't have full realization of that, but I, at least in principle, understand it and accept it. And I want to be accepted by Krishna and guided by Krishna and his dear devotees. Okay, so, any discussion? Yeah. Two.
Not just at the level of behavior, but at the level of consciousness through repetitive hearing.
Very good.
So it's like the submission. So there is a submissive persona and there is submission. And submissive persona is not what's like, one understand that that is also another material layer. So it's like when...
Why? Why is it another material layer?
Because the consciousness is not matching with the behavior.
In the beginning.
In the beginning.
Okay.
And when one starts to recognize the difference...
Well, you know, I would modify what you just said. I'm sorry for interrupting the flow. It's a mix. Mm-hmm. Not, it's material. Because submission to something that's transcendental, Krishna accepts. Not material. No. Not... Because there's a spiritual dimension. In the very, very beginning, very, very beginning, just someone who says, yes, I'll chant, there's submission. It has to mature, but there's a spiritual dimension for sure, which Krishna accepts. So, continue.
Before I continue, can I clarify this then?
Okay.
So what does it, now I get it that it's not that the activity is zero, but I'm trying to differentiate, because in one of your class when you were given Harmony Collective about the duties of our bona fide disciple, some topic like that, where you were differentiating this point between submissive persona versus submission.
Okay.
So I'm trying to understand that. So like when one is learning to move towards submission and trying to differentiate between the two, at one level one is taking a chance and
sure
might make mistakes over
that's,
on the
that's way. Life with every endeavor there's some fault. So what's the point?
So the point is that one, instead of fearing about making a mistake, one stay with the process of hearing, and that's the protection, and keep refining the consciousness along with the behavior.
Yeah. You got it. Now, this is, you know, this raises the topic, and yet another topic of fear, and specifically in this case, fear of making a mistake. We should be careful not foolish, and so fearful has its place in a life of cultivation of bhakti, but it doesn't paralyze us. We're cautious, knowing my fallible nature, knowing what Krishna says, there's going to be mistakes, so don't become paralyzed by fear, but be cautious. And if there's mistakes, Krishna will help us, because the consciousness of submission, although not perfect, submission consciousness is there. That's the gradual progression. So go back to something you've said several times, that is, the mood of submission and the act of submission are not identical. One is what drives the other. That's starting point of all of this. or the quality, the character of like Vidura, meek and gentle. And then comes behavior that's meek and gentle. But his character, so submission is similarly a mood or a character, a quality. It's less than perfect. And as we go forward, we're going to be less than perfect submission and acts of submission. There's going to be mistakes. Krishna will help us. That's the good news. We're dependent, just like trying to chant attentively. We're dependent. So staying in the mood of calling for mercy while we're making our effort to chant or be submissive or be meek and humble or be tolerant or be whatever we're trying to be. The quality, the good character of a devotee. We're not there yet. We're dependent. We still continue to try and we'll make mistakes. So the operative principle is the effort heading in the right direction, and then that's not the end of it. It's the mood of being dependent upon Krishna, because otherwise I'm not going to get there. That's part of submission, major part. Does it help?
Yeah, I think what I'm getting out of it is this. So for me, the take-in that I'm taking is this dedicated commitment to hearing for a prolonged period of time, because there is going to be refinement of character at every step.
Yeah, and with faith, hearing for a prolonged period of time, with faith, knowing. Faith is based upon great authorities approve it. That's the basis of my faith. Guru Sadhu Shastra says, that's the basis of my faith. So I continue for a prolonged period of time with great effort.
Second is from, I think there was yesterday or day before yesterday, there was a slide of the iceberg. And you were making some points. So this is question about spiritual culture and reviving spiritual culture. And on that slide, where does the culture come? Is it at the value system?
It's the whole thing. The whole thing. Because culture means behavior. The whole image is cultural engineering, and there's three, not just one. Where does culture come? It's all three. It rests upon the one that's at the bottom. But one also has to look at your value system. One also has to look at behaviors. They should reflect what's at the bottom. And that the question, one of the questions we heard first evening, was what about the disconnect? People have a value or consciousness and their behavior doesn't match it. So, all three for cultural. And cultural engineering or paradigm shift is you have to examine. And I was emphasizing maybe too many times, but what's really important, you know, deep inside, the part at the bottom, your deepest held convictions. It's just eternally true. I may not be there, but it's eternally true. And then come values, and then comes behavior. We may often do, we may try to adjust our values. Or as a parent, we may try to adjust values or mold values. It's just natural. And then behaviors that match those values. So as a parent, how to touch the heart of, or as a teacher, to a student or a spiritual master, to a disciple, how do you touch the deepest, deepest, deepest place in the heart? What's really, you know, what are your deepest held convictions? We're not used to asking that question. So then you work on the values, but if that deepest held question isn't asked and there isn't progress towards the answer, it's going to be hard to hold the values and the behaviors. I mean, it's possible. but gets challenged by the world that we live in. It impacts on us values of others.
So then when I see from that perspective of reviving spiritual culture within oneself and starting mm-hmm. with one's family.
Yes.
So we look at all the three layers.
Yes.
And then that's the whole picture of culture is not just
yes.
even value or behavior, but
yes.
All the three layers.
And behavior change is easier, value change is more challenging, and even getting someone to deeply contemplate their fundamental underlying assumptions, they're never changing, deep within yourself and within the heart of everyone, for that matter, at least for the individual. So those that the reference that I was making connected with that is Lord Macaulay saying, you know, break their appreciation for their culture. It's not just the behavior. It's not just their value. That spirituality is our deepest held. That's where everything in this country rests upon. We have, so break it. Systematically break it, besides the behaviors and the values. They tried. Systematically, they tried. I mean, the invading persons, they also tried. But the rock, the foundation of India is its spiritual culture. And, you know, and that has turned out to be all over the place.
So, just last point on this.
Yes.
So, like, as you're talking about this point of, like, he actually, at one level, I feel he was very successful in what he said, in systematically breaking it. And now, for me to systematically revive it, what are the steps that one can take to revive that culture?
Well, all three. I mean, what would be... commonly, what are my values? And then are my behaviors, like this question that the sociologist lady was asking, are my behaviors consistent with my values? And if not, what's blocking it is anartha's in the heart. So I need to work on the anartha. But how do I work on by bhajana kriya? I have to do that systematically, knowing that that's going to help remove anartha so my values and my behaviors match. And that's like, so what are some of the steps? Those are some of the steps. And not, you know, an easy question to answer, but ask the question over a prolonged period of time. The bottom one. So that's all part of the steps. You know, a way that I was saying it in the weekend was the goal is prema bhakti. My life is meant to come to that stage of prema bhakti and go back to Godhead. It comes out of the mouth really easily. Is that really my conviction? Deepest held conviction? And what does it mean? I mean, it doesn't, you have to get into this self-doubting space, or go the other direction, overconfident space. Just, you know, a reflection, looking within. And then, as that looking within, the conviction becomes clearer, and what that goal actually is, that we have conviction in, or that principle of your life that's the deepest held conviction, that also becomes clearer. And that's assisted by the other two, your values and your behaviors. And the regular sadhana that's quality performed. That's the bhakti process. it is cultural conquest or cultural transformation. So those are some of the breakdown into pieces. What does it look like? What are the steps? You know, the bhakti process, done genuinely, sincerely, with proper guidance. Anyone else? Yeah. Here comes the microphone.
Maharaj, you said that in Krishna consciousness, we should like spiritualize worldly duties, and like we do duties on behalf of Krishna because he creates like the system, and then we decide on how much we do based on like our working capacity.
Not just how much we do,
but or like what we do.
Yes, yeah.
And like what's suitable for us. So like I have two questions on this.
Yeah.
The first thing is, can you like elaborate / explain like what the system is exactly?
What the system?
Yeah.
Which system?
Like you said like a Sanskrit word.
Huh?
You said like a Sanskrit word on like the system that Krishna creates.
Varnashram.
Yeah.
The verse of Bhagavad Gita that he says is Chatur Varna Maya Shrishtam. So the occupations, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So in Bhagavad Gita.
Oh, so you meant like the caste system, kind of?
Yeah, well, that's the conventional. That's the perversion of the four varnas. So there's the head department, the arms department, belly department, legs department. That's the caste system is to pay. Based upon your birth, that's who you are. You're one of those four. And what Krishna doesn't say that, he doesn't say that. That's the perversion. What Krishna says is guna karma. Again and again and again. Quality in work. Quality in work. So what do? If you do the work of a brahmana and you have the quality of a brahmana, you're a brahmana. So how to get people, if they wish to become of that quality and work, prepared. Sadhana bhakti, chanting, etc., etc., etc. It may qualify one to do that. It may qualify one to become a good shudra. Depends on one's quality and work. That's the ISKCONized, or the Vaishnava picture of Varna and Ashram. Here's a brahmana, here are his qualities, here's how he works. You know that verse, six occupations, patan patan yajan yajan dan. So, worships and teaches others to worship, studies and teaches others the purpose of the scripture, receives charity and gives in charity. Six occupations. That's the work, and then there's the quality. It's right in Bhagavad Gita. Not by birth. It's by quality and work.
Got it. So basically, like, that's how you assess kind of like what your capacity is.
Okay. You can read. I really like this particular verse and purport. It's in Canto 1, Chapter 9. Bhishma is instructing Yudhisthira of how a teacher takes a student, a qualified teacher, takes a student, and first and foremost is character. And everyone gets character. That's the teacher's duty. But while the teacher is passing that on to the student, they see what's their quality. The type of work that they like, with their nature, besides character, guna and karma. And then a qualified, Vedic qualified teacher, they teach them in that particular occupation. They prepare them to be a carpenter, or prepare them. They may pass them on to somebody else, but they see the character, and they give them the qualified teacher that can help them develop that skill. Someone's a kshatriya, someone's a brahmana. So There's a something of an attempt to do that in the Bhaktivedanta Academy in Mayapur. run by Bhaktivedanta Purnaswami for, you know, a few decades. And he doesn't always get it right. I've been told by those who were students of his, without the detail. But that's a assessment of a qualified teacher is, what's the guna and karma of this child, along with character? What is the appropriate skill training that they need?
So doesn't that kind of imply that the original caste system was kind of flawed, because you could be born into one thing?
Of course.
But
No. It's not the original caste system. Please, I'm disturbed by the language. The original Varna system is not flawed. Here's a for example. For example, in Canto 5, starting with Chapter 5, we find Rishabhdev. He had 100 sons. And you read carefully. And some of them, he's a king. He's an incarnation of the personality of Godhead. Some of them became kings. Many of them became brahmanas. And some became beyond the caste system, beyond the Varna system. They became perfected Uttama Adhikari persons like Narada. So, you know, Narada sannyasi, but he never, you know, took the order of sannyas. He's just Narada Muni. He's beyond his brothers, 9 brothers, they were brahmanas. He was beyond that standard. He never married, and he just, you know, so 9 of the sons of Rishabhdev, they were in that same category. Doesn't give detail until, again, in the beginning of Canto 11, they're called the Nava Yogendras, the 9 sons of Rishabhdev. So they were over there, you know, not by birth. Some were kings, some were brahmanas. So the original Varna Ashram system is by guna and karma. They all got character. And then they had a different occupation according to their nature, not by birth.
So it's like more of nurture, like the nature versus nurture. It's like based on what, like, you go through, not based on what you're born into.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. The perversion is what you're born into.
Yeah.
And there's a reason behind it. Pride. Now, some sons of kings, there's one example. Rishabhdev was a king, but some sons of kings became brahmanas and they weren't kings, etc.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay. Guna and karma, that's the standard, not birth, not janma. Krishna never says that.
Thank you so much for the class, Maharaj. My question is related to the essence of Bhagavad Gita class you gave the other day. And you mentioned Bhagavad Gita deals with the 5 aspects, and one of those aspects was karma. So the laws of karma, and you mentioned, you know, 4 of them are eternal, but karma is not eternal. So the laws of karma, are they eternal or?
Of course.
Okay.
And there's a law enforcer who is eternal.
Right. Okay, okay. So, laws of karma, okay. So, related to this, I have another question. How does one discern, say, you know, one feels that, okay, the karma is acting on me, there's some phase that something must have done, I may have done in my, you know,
past.
Previous life or in the past, that, you know, karma is acting on me. How do I discern that, you know, I should respond to it or I should accept it the way it is?
Depends on what it is. It depends on you. Both. First, accept. Next, go to the mode of goodness, saying to yourself, what's the best way to be of service to Krishna in this circumstance? and maybe accept it, and maybe do something. But, and whatever that something you may do, or whatever, however you conduct yourself about in the manner of accepting it, the mode of service. That's the spiritual power that we have. That power of choice of how we respond to things.
So, well, sometimes we feel that, okay, in the process of, is it something like, you know, in the process of responding to it, am I neglecting the duty, or I should just take it, you know?
That's Arjuna's question, isn't it? And that, you know, that's a super soul question. So you won't get a confirming answer, nor even a proper answer, unless the super soul connection is strong. Super soul can be sending you all kinds of signals, and if your receiver is off, you can have another idea. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is. It's a modes of nature conditioning idea, whatever it is, called the mind, and that's where the signal comes. But the mind is colored. So we're going to read the signal according to our coloration of the mind, which has everything to do with our conception of life, because that's where the mind carries conceptions of life, and then the conception of life is influenced by false ego. So, you know, we're stuck, apparently. But we can, at least we can go to basics. There are some things we know that are really clear. We do those things assiduously, or as these verses were describing. Great effort for a sustained period of time with faith. So it just gets me more clean and closer to the Supersoul, closer to reality with a capital R. And then I can discern. Until then, I'm not going to be able. Now back to her question, you know, I've got to do something. I'm trying to be submissive. But I know that there's, like, even during different times of the day, there's different degrees of submissive. So I have to over a prolonged period of time, continue with this sadhana process, very carefully executed, you know, carefully chanting for a long time for us. And then all the other things, and those things that we know, that's clear. We do that. We're going to make some mistakes. We try carefully to avoid those mistakes when we know that something is just not okay. And we can know it's not okay from scripture, and we can ask persons who are in that okay space, is this okay? Not for the purpose of controlling us, but, you know, helping us see what's okay and what's not okay. That's what we need quality association for. Persons that can guide us, and they have quality, spiritual quality. Let me see if there's others. Yes.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
It's getting late too.
Okay, I'll keep it quick.
Yeah.
This question is regarding demands and Krishna.
Demands?
Yeah.
From Krishna or to Krishna?
To Krishna.
Okay.
I'm slowly starting to trust more in Krishna's plan. I'm confident that he knows when to give me what's right for me, and that he's sitting in my heart listening to all my desires. However, at times I find myself demanding or desperately begging Krishna for certain things, or pleading him not to take certain things away from me, but not for better chanting or better hearing or remembering him more often. What can I do to correct this behavior? Correct or channelize this behavior?
Purify it. You know, that's long term. the short term, and the ones that you can, you pause them. And the ones that you can't, there's two scriptural references that are useful. One of them is Canto 2. Akama sarvakamo va mokshakama udarati. You've heard that one?
No.
Yes, it's in, it, you just go back and listen to it. It's a standard, very important verse. Tivrena bhakti yogena. Tivra, you know, intense, strong, determined, powerful. Tivrena bhakti yogena. So do that. Tivra bhakti. Even, I know I have this sarvakama thing happening, at least, you know, sometimes stronger than others, but I find myself appealing to Krishna for stuff. I know it's temporary and it's not like the highest standard, but that's what I find myself doing. So, like Dhruva, he went to Vishnu for stuff. And it was big stuff he wanted. And by Tivra Bhakti, he overcame the desire for stuff. He became pure by Tivra Bhakti. Now, then another is in the 11th canto, the Uddhava Gita section, Krishna speaking to Uddhava, and says somebody who finds themselves in this position, they know on the one hand and on the other hand. But this is the place where I am right now. I have attachment to things that I know that are not so wholesome. I mean, not necessarily something sinful, but something that's not so wholesome either. And by engaging in this something that's not so wholesome is going to have consequences for me. And here I go, because it's my nature. Knowing I'm going to get some difficulty because of that. But all the while going on faithfully wishing to come to that higher place. Very practical. And sure enough, some, you know, not the best kind of consequence comes from something like that. I accept it. All the while anticipating coming to the stage of Shuddha, bhakti. That's a qualifier of the Tivra Bhakti, is come to Shuddha Bhakti even when I'm not there yet. Now, that verse and purport, I'd have to look it up. It's a nice one, specifically to respond to your question. It's 11th canto. Send me a little note and I'll send you the quote.
Sure.
Along with Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary, in addition to the BBT commentary. I want to end because I have a lot of stuff to do. I have been really, really busy over the last several days, and more coming up ahead of me, and then more coming up after that, and people expecting things of me that I'm not able to do. I'm going to thank you all very much. Prabhupada ki. Yeah.